Hey guys, just wanted to take a moment to thank you for listening to Sidebar Forever. If you like the show, please subscribe to us at sidebarforever.com, as well as share episodes of the podcast on your social media. That way, new listeners can find us as well. Today's podcast is a review of The Fast and the Furious, the 2001 action film about illegal street racing, starring Vin Diesel, Michelle Rodriguez, Paul Walker, and Jordana Brewster, with the 9th installment of this series staring its way into theaters soon. This year marks the 20th anniversary of the landmark original. That's right, it's Dom, Letty, Brian, Mia, Vince, and the villainous Johnny Tran and his gang. Oh yeah, and Ja Rule too. In the conversation, the three of us jumped right in the driver's seat, discussing the cast and themes in the movie, obvious comparisons to 1991's Point Break, the stunts and set pieces, and how Fast 1 birthed what has become a billion-dollar franchise. And later, we switch gears and ask the big question: how many more of these can they make? All right, we'll pump our brakes. We're just kidding. But, as always, thanks for listening.
Go! I just like that.
Nas!
The Nas! I want the Nas!
Nas!
Vinny D.
Yeah. Rookie, you know?
That's it. 20 years ago, in the summer of 2001, The Fast and the Furious was released in theaters.
Yeah.
Starring Vin Diesel, Michelle Rodriguez, Paul Walker, Jordana Brewster, and others. It's an action movie, really, but it was about illegal street racing in Los Angeles. Directed by Rob Cohen. This was a big movie.
Yeah.
I think the budget was like $38 million, but it made like $144 million domestically. It made like $62 million worldwide. And it basically launched a $1 billion franchise. For the Fast and Furious movies. As a matter of fact, the 9th installment of the movie is supposed to be released this summer in 2021. We'll see if that happens.
And it even has an animated series as well for the kids.
Oh, I didn't even know that. I didn't know that, sir.
Yeah, I peeped it on Prime. I didn't watch it, but I saw the little thumbnail for it. I was like, wow. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's everywhere.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. Yeah. That's crazy, man. That is crazy. But, you know, with the ninth installment coming out this year, and with it being the 20-year anniversary, we thought we would do a playback and talk about the movie. Adrian, you mentioned to Dee and I when we were in our exchange that you have the most vivid memory of seeing this movie with your friends.
Yeah.
And the effect that it had on you. Because I guess you probably, what, like 18 or 19 at the time?
If it came out in 2001, I was 21. So I was square in the demographic, yo. Like, okay. Bullseye.
Drinking that alcohol, dog.
Man, but yo, when this came out, we went to go see it opening night with the crowd and everything. You know what I'm saying? Over here at the Regal 24. You know, that's where we see all the big movies.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. Parking lot must have been packed, yo.
Oh, man. Was it? Dude.
Did the searchlights out, yo?
But they didn't have the searchlights, but it was a big to do. I will say that. You know, that theater was packed. The crowd was right. And I'm telling you, from like that first scene, you know what I'm saying? Like the movie just oozed coolness. Just oozed sexiness, just oozed everything for like everybody that was in the audience. You know, it was sexy with the very attractive girls. It was something for the gearheads with all these slick rides, these great cars, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And all this somewhat technical stuff, you know, talking about them. And then it was also like a crime thriller sort of, you know what I'm saying? Like an action movie crime thriller type thing, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, from the first scene where these these low riding Honda Accords with the ground effect kits, the blue ground effect kits, and they like swooping in on this this tractor trailer, yo.
Neon light show.
Oh man, The theater was hollering. It was like woo, and then the thing I knew, even at the time I knew this was unrealistic, but it still looked cool as hell. The way they kind of slide under the trailer in the back of it, it's like there's not enough clearance for that. No, there would never be enough clearance in real life for that. But it just looked slick and cool, and they did the heist and they got away. And it was like, that was a great way to open the movie, man. Great.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And just throughout the whole movie, you could gradually see two things. The first thing is the exact moment that Vin Diesel became a star. Mm-hmm. It's when he, after the race, and Brian is like, Paul Walker's character is just saying, man, I could have had you, man. I could have had you. And Vin Diesel's just like, he goes his speech,
down.
Yo. He's like, you're granny clutching. You're doing this and that. He was like, come on now. And he just does the outstretched arm with the cross on. And it was like, even everybody in the theater was like, this is gospel right here.
He did what I'd call the I Am Spartacus move, yo. You know what I'm saying?
He's like,
you have me?
you didn't even have your car.
Seriously. And just, that was, you could sense, that's the exact moment that Vin Diesel became a star. Theaters nationwide, worldwide, right there.
Yeah.
And the second thing too, you could sense that this was like, it was a change of paradigm, not in a huge way. Like it wasn't groundbreaking or anything, but it did kind of signal in, you know, this whole period for like, I'd say for about 2 or 3 years where stuff dealing with cars, like those exotic sports cars and everything, just was very, very, very popular. You could see it on video games. You know, Gran Turismo was out. Gran Turismo 2 on PlayStation was out.
Need for Speed, bro?
Yes, Need for Speed. Oh, Grand Theft Auto. Several of these games, you know, that were very popular were coming into their own. And just the way this movie was presented too, man, it was just like, man, young, attractive cast. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Something for the young people, you know. And again, it was just cool. It's just so cool, man. So yeah, I have a very vivid memory of seeing that for the first time at the theater, man, and just how it made me felt. And to top it off, after the movie let out, right? All you heard was just people revving their cars. I don't care if you had like a minivan. Yes.
Hoopty, I don't care if you got a slick ride or a hoopty, you revving the engine.
No, you know, just you know, engines whining and everything. Like everybody was just so amped up coming out of that movie. It was just like, man.
What I want to know is from your perspective, how many people came out of there? How many people came out of there saying, Monica?
That's the other thing too. The things reminded me, my friends and I. We went around for at least a couple of weeks after the movie just randomly shouting out some of those non-sequitur lines, you know, like like with Vin Diesel, like they smell like a leak or something, him and Brian. And Vin Diesel looks at him and says, "Nice!" And they jump and the car blows up. So we would just say, just randomly out of nowhere, "Nice!" Yeah. And I don't mean illmatic. or my favorite, the one I kept going back to was, he kept me out of handcuffs. And then of course, the infamous Ja Rule, Monica. But man,
hey, look, I'm not gonna lie, Monica was fine, yo.
He was, dang. And then he tried to come up to her afterwards. It was just like, yo, but about what you said, I know I lost and everything, but about what you said, she said, N word.
You lost. You know what? That was something I was going to bring up. Like, some of the language in the movie, I was like, okay, did she just call him a nigga?
Straight up. And the theater, when she said that, it's like, everybody was like, ooh.
And she reneged on it too, yo, because it's like, she's like, you already have this, but if you win, you get this, me, and her.
Uh-huh. And you just saw that, wow, that bouncy smile, wow, on Ja Rule's face. You're like,
right. Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, Menage.
He's like, holla, holla.
It's murder.
Oh, man.
You know, Adrian, you're talking about the movie, and that's like, it really was like a celebration of a very specific kind of youth culture for that era, with the fashion and the music.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And underground illegal activity and staying up late and going back to the house and drinking and smoking and partying and,
mm-hmm,
very multicultural, you know, blacks and Latinos and whites and Asians and,
mm-hmm,
you know, everybody kind of mixing and, and everybody's kind of on the same playing field. But also the other thing you're talking about, like with the fascination with, you know, with cars and things. One of the things that I noticed too was like, this movie kind of launched like a whole bunch of other movies that were about like illegal underground cultures.
Oh yeah.
And extreme sports and really just action movies involving cars. You got like Biker Boys came after this.
Yep.
Torque.
Yep.
Eventually, Triple X, you know, which was about an extreme, you know, sports athlete. And that was actually directed by Rob Cohen, too.
Okay.
Obviously starring Vin Diesel. You had The Italian Job.
Mm-hmm.
You had the very first Death Race remake, I think was maybe 2007 or 6 or something like that.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then another thing I wanted to bring up was many years after that, you have the Point Break remake. But I was going to ask, did you all, was it talked about that this was basically just a ripoff of Point Break with cars?
Huh. I never got that. But now that you mention it, I can see those elements now. I've never heard it described that way, but I can see that. Because it's saying things of like, we're committing these heists using these cars. It's all black cars.
Yeah.
We're wearing helmets, so you can't see who it is, you know. And you have to send in an undercover to break into this ring to infiltrate it, to become one of them, because he's knowledgeable in this type of world. You know what I'm saying?
Right. And he even makes access to them through a girl that he likes.
Right.
You know, that like he meets up with, the actress from Point Break, the original Point Break.
Oh, Lori Petty?
Lori Petty. He meets up with Lori Petty,
mm-hmm,
you know, at the surfing shop, and then he meets up with her at quote Toretto's Diner or whatever the hell it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
So I mean, it was essentially the same thing, you know, and him having to go back and answer to his bosses and kind of getting caught up in the charisma, you know, and the excitement of being with these characters, but
right.
But yeah, the Point Break remake came out maybe, I don't know, it might have been 2012 or 2015, many years later, but probably on the heels of Fast 5 and Fast 6, when Fast 7, all those movies were coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because they definitely found an audience, that's for sure. You found an audience supporting you. Right, man. You can't drive down the street nowadays and not see someone that has a car kitted out that wants to be part of the Fast and Furious lifestyle and idea.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Now, let me ask you this. When did MTV's Pimp My Ride start?
I think that was definitely early 2000s. That might have been around the same time. Maybe about 2000, 2001, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I wonder if even all of that, well, you know, it was like a weird kind of a confection going on.
Maybe. Because in fact, I think I had read somewhere a while ago was that the inspiration for the Fast and the Furious came from two places. One, the Fast and the Furious was actually the title of a movie back in the 50s, I want to say.
1955.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So they took the title, okay, and because it's a nice title. It's a good movie title. And then the other thing, too, was that the inspiration for, you know, this illegal street racing angle came from an article, I think, in a Los Angeles local magazine or something like that, that was writing about these young people racing on weekends. you know what I'm saying? And mm-hmm. how much trouble it was just causing as far as like traffic and them blocking off streets and stuff like that illegally. And I think the production company, Rob Cohen, I think he's a producer as well, in addition to being the director. I think him and his production company, they caught wind of this article and they, you know, really massaged it into, hey, this might be a good movie. This has elements of something good here. You know what I'm saying? Mm. Yeah. So I definitely think your correlation, you know, is correct too. You know, just like Pimp My Ride coming out of around that time, because that was immensely popular as well. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could totally see
yeah.
that.
Mm-hmm. The article was called Racer X.
Okay.
Oh, nice. Speed Racer fame, yeah. Speed Racer yeah. fame, yeah.
Yeah, it was written by a guy named Ken Lee. And my understanding, and this is probably a good example, like what you're kind of talking about, Adrian, is a good example of a director / producer who really knows how to develop something from an idea to a script to, you know, getting it into production and really making it into a movie, like seeing an idea and then saying, how can we turn this into a movie? But
yeah,
The Fast and the Furious was originally called Red Line. That was the working title.
Oh, okay.
And the film that they took it from was a Roger Corman film, and he actually had, they paid him to license the film name for their version.
Oh, okay.
So Corman got paid, you know, based off of them using that title from his movie, which I think his movie was about racing.
Yeah, of course, back in the 50s. Racing cars. Yeah,
racing cars as well.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, man, that's interesting. So as Adrian was saying, it's basically about a bunch of illegal street racers who are doing these heists, these really kind of complex, truck heists, you know, undercover of night. And they send in the undercover cop to kind of infiltrate. And then, of course, he gets caught up.
Right.
And, you know, mayhem.
He likes the tuna sandwiches. That's all, you know.
He likes the tuna sandwiches without the crust.
Yes.
Without the crust. But D, what did you think watching? Had you ever seen this in its entirety?
No, I haven't, yo. Honestly.
Okay.
I mean, I've seen segments of it. I started watching parts of it from the beginning. I miss it. And I conflated the Fast and Furious 1 and 2 together, because I was totally expecting to see.
Oh. Like,
yeah. I was expecting to see Tyrese and expecting to see Ludacris in there. I was like, okay, wait a minute. This is not what I remember, you know? So when I first started watching it from the beginning, I was like, wait a minute, this is kind of cool. The heist thing got me hooked. And I was like, okay, this is cool. I mean, it's impossible, but it's cool, you know? That's what you want to see a movie. You see movies for fantasy a lot of times. You know what I mean? So I was like, okay, I got this. But for the longest time, man, because I hadn't seen the entire thing, I knew the thrust of the characters. It was about Dom's crew. It was about Toretto's crew. So I knew ultimately there would have to be about Toretto. It would be Toretto. It wouldn't be the Asian family. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I was kind of thrown off from it. I was like, wait a minute. These guys are kind of a little more badass than Toretto's crew. They're walking around with, you know, driving motorcycles, and that was the key right there. Motorcycles and shooting like these crazy, you know, machine guns and shit. You know what I'm saying? And blowing up you know, cars and shit. So they were kind of a bit of a Yakuza going on in there, dude. So it made sense to look at. So I'm like, okay, so Asian cars, you know, Asian crime lord. His dad doesn't know about it. That kind of works for me. I get that. But the twist, of course, was at the very beginning, wherein it was laid out for you, this is going to be a Vin Diesel movie, and this is going to be about that particular, you know, family. So they kind of showed their colors at the last minute, though, you know, because it was all about Brian getting clues, and, you know, is it them or not them? And, you know, Toretto is he's too cool for that, you know, even though he's got rules, but they're his rules. He goes by them, and, you know, I don't understand why. To me, it was kind of strange. Like, I don't understand why a character like him that had been in jail or been in prison, where he was, maybe juvie, I don't know how exaggerated that was.
No, he was in prison. He was in prison.
He was in prison for like two years, right? Was it 2 years?
Yeah.
For beating this guy up. He didn't kill the guy, but he beat his ass really bad, dude.
Right.
I don't see why a guy like that would, like, once you've got a chance to fly straight, you know, you should be getting kickbacks from getting the kids to go to buy these cars and buy parts at the parts store. And you have a couple of side businesses, but I guess that wasn't good enough for you, you know. So you decide you want to rob and steal shit to get, you know, more parts to, I guess, the place that was selling you parts anyway, or kidding you up, or whatever. It was a weird premise, dude, but I guess it worked ultimately in terms of the payoff. But you know, I enjoyed it, man, more than I thought I would, ultimately, when I watched it from beginning to end. So.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I did too. And you know, this is my thing, my relationship with these movies. I never saw them in the theaters. Never was even tempted to see them in the theaters.
Right.
It just wasn't my thing at all. And the first one that I actually saw was when Jason Statham's character, Deckard Shaw, shows up.
Okay.
That was the first one I saw, and I was like, oh, okay, that isn't too bad. And then I saw the ones after that.
Okay.
Up to the new one. And then I went back to Fast Five, which I think, to me, is the best one.
Okay.
Fast Five is the best one, because I was like, oh, yeah. When The Rock came in, and they're in Brazil, you know, and all of that. So I think that was even the best one to me. But so I've kind of come to these movies like way, 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 way after the fact, mm-hmm. and can kind of look at them all like, you know, they're all like on a buffet, and I can get a little bit of this and get a little bit of that. But then you were talking about the whole thing of like, you know, Dom's creed and all of that. Did any of the supposed themes, did it hit you guys, especially you, Adrian, when you were young, the idea of like loyalty and family and friends, and having each other's back and all of that? Did any of that sit with you way back when?
Yeah. I mean, all of that will always play well on film. You know what I'm saying? Anytime you talk about like being loyal to your friends or to your family or even to a certain lifestyle, you know, that always plays well on film, you know? And I think too, because when you're at that age in your early 20s or whatnot, you really value, you know, friendship, even though sometimes, a lot of times even, you know, those friendships are very tenuous. You know,
right.
They're not deep. They're not meant to be deep or lifelong, but you still value having friends, being social, being around, you know, other people. And I think that's an element that was brought into, you know, the Fast and the Furious. Like, we're all a part of this same subculture. You know, it's hush hush, so shh. But I got my family involved. I got my friends. These like my brothers.
Right.
Yeah.
That was Dom's sticking point too, man. To where they got chased by the cops, and the only person that went for him and picked him up was of course Brian.
Right.
And he's like, and they get back to the house like later on that night around 2 o'clock in the morning, whatever the case may be, and he's like, where were you? He looked out for me.
He kept me out of handcuffs.
That's it.
Exactly. Like, man, how can you trust him, man? You sure you can trust him? He kept me out of handcuffs.
Yeah. He took homeboy's beer from him, yo. Wiped it off and gave it to Brian, yo.
And then like, wiped it off, yo.
Oh man,
that was ill. That was
so much so that, you know, that Jordana Brewster's character Mia, she says, you know, he likes you. He doesn't even like anybody.
Yeah.
And then later on in the movie, you know, Dom says, hey, let's go for a ride. He takes him for a ride, and he goes to this, you know, the other garage. Where he's got that black muscle car. Ooh. With the, you know,
his pops car. It's his pops car.
Popping out of, yeah, his pops car. Ooh. And he tells the story of how he beat the guy and went to jail and all of this.
Right.
And was that the point where he gives the big, I live my life a quarter mile at a time.
Yeah, that was it.
For those 10 seconds, I'm truly free.
Yeah.
like damn, you in the Flash, yo. You and Wally West, I guess I'm going
right. Right.
Yeah, man. I liked it, man. There are numerous things I liked about it, man. One of the things I liked about it was the whole thing wherein I can't think of the guy that was always he was the jealous brother that was always coming in there. He basically was mad because Vin's sister liked him more than he liked her, and he was afraid to
Vince.
Yeah,
his name was Vince.
Yeah,
that's funny. So Vince was like, he comes in there, he's like, yeah, really, he's trying to bust Brian's balls, you know, washing dishes with her,
mm-hmm.
and he's like, yeah, remember that restaurant you're telling me about that you know, and he's getting all into
the Cuban restaurant. He's, oh yeah, cha cha cha,
She's like, yeah. He walks over to him. Why don't you take me to that next on Friday, whatever? He's like, oh shit. And he walks out, slamming the shit. Like,
yeah. That was cold, yo. That was cold. Yeah, she was wrong for that. I gotta say,
that was too cold, man. That was too cold.
Yeah,
man. And what about? I like the the car jockey, man, that dude was like, he was gifted with the cars, and he's like
yeah,
AD, you know, nice little speech in there too, man. I think that's what kind of gave Brian the whole feels, dude. You know, Brian was like catching the feels, because he's obviously gifted at what he does. He's a savant.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. You know, but he feels like an outcast because he's smaller than everybody else. And he had this quote unquote learning development, or whatever the case may be. You know, plus his pops was in jail, whatever. You know, so he had this whole thing of an outcast vibe. It was kind of cool to see him get shot up, dude. It was like, well, I wasn't expecting that. That wasn't really, really necessary, dude.
You know what, Dad?
But I get it.
You know, that reminded me of, yo, that drive-by shooting. It reminded me of, like, Menace to Society. You know?
Yeah, yo.
like the bullets hitting the yard and people scrambling.
Yeah.
Really? See, I got New Jack City from that, dude, when Nino was on the back of the bike.
Oh, man. Yeah.
That too. But look, I was the whole time while I was watching that scene, I was like, okay, it's 2001, but we still ain't that far from the 90s.
Right.
Motherfuckers are still doing drive-bys in L.A., yo. They still doing drive-bys.
Right.
Seriously.
Oh, seriously. Man.
Yeah.
And you know what else is cool, too, man? The second big heist that they had planned, and the way they were executing it in broad daylight, and that whole set piece, you know, with the cars, and they got to rescue the dude off the truck and you know what it was like, Swizz? It was like Duel.
Oh yeah.
You saw the trucker inside there, but you never saw his face. But he had that shotgun.
That's exactly what I was thinking when I saw it. I was like, okay, he's like the faceless trucker.
Right.
They even show him loading his shotgun to continue shooting, but they never show his face.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I was like, this is so much like Duel. It was crazy. You know what I'm saying?
It's crazy.
And then like you know, he gets wrapped up on the thing, so they got to try and rescue him. And Letty's car ends up, Michelle Rodriguez's car ends up flipping over and everything. And just the way that Vin Diesel mustered all the dramatic impetus that he could. Letty!
Man, let's talk about Michelle Rodriguez in this film too, man. She told a female badass that stood out in this film, dude. Mm. It was definitely her, dude. She rocked that shit.
Oh man, and you know what? She's one of those to where it's like she got better. Like I've seen her in just pieces of the later movies. I've never seen the later movies in their entirety, but to me it seemed like she got better in the later films. I mean, she got even more beautiful too, if you ask me. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. Yeah.
Like in them later films, like, whoo, good Lord. Wow.
The only film she had done, as a matter of fact, for as far as most of the actors, she had done Girl Fight before this, but this was her second feature film. So she was still a kid.
Yeah.
When she made this movie. So Vin Diesel, prior to this, he was in Private Ryan. He was in Pitch Black.
Boiler Room.
He was in.
So he did do Pitch Black before this?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Cause to me, honestly, Pitch Black to me was like his standout role for me, dude. Like, I mean,
yeah.
Cause he obviously he carried that role because he was elite. He was Riddick. He was a character that was going to get them out of that situation. But he absolutely killed that man. That movie.
And of course, he was the voice of the Iron Giant as well.
The voice of Iron Giant. And oddly enough, he did Pitch Black. He wasn't that big of a star, but he had enough where he only signed on to do this movie if they made some changes to the script.
Right.
And when they came back to him to do the second one, he didn't want to do it.
Okay.
He didn't want to do any sequels. And the only reason he ended up coming back was he made a deal with the studio. I think it was so to do Chronicles of Riddick and for him to own the character of Riddick.
Oh, okay.
It was like a legality thing. And so he said, okay. So he did the cameo in, I think, Tokyo Drift.
Yes.
One of those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, he did the cameo in that one, and then he ended up coming back for the fourth one, and then, you know, the subsequent movies after that. But yeah, Michelle Rodriguez had only done Girl Fight before this. Paul Walker was in She's All That, the kind of teen movie. He was in Varsity Blues, and he was in The Skulls, which was also directed by Rob Cohen, the director of The Fast and Furious. I imagine that's how they hooked up, and then he got Paul Walker.
Okay. So when did he do Into the Blue? Was that after?
That was after.
Fast and Furious?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, that was well after. And Jordana Brewster had only done The Faculty. That was her only feature film before that.
Really? What?
Yeah, that was
Oh, shoot. Okay.
But check it. Rob Cohen directed The Wiz.
He's on down the road, yeah.
He directed The Witches of Eastwick.
What?
Dragonheart with that dope-ass Jeff Jones poster. I mentioned it once before.
Right, right, right.
And he directed XXX.
And what about Dragon, the Bruce Lee story?
He directed that too?
Yes, he did. In fact, when they go back to the house afterwards, 2 o'clock in the morning, that's playing on TV. That's playing on the TV there.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, that's dope.
Yeah.
That's dope.
I knew that even when I was watching it in the theater. I was like, oh, that's cool because he did that. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
A little self-congratulatory there, but we'll take it.
Yeah.
You're right, right, right. But I kind of like it when they sneak it in and it's not overt.
Right.
You know? Yeah, I like that. Also in this movie, Ted Levine plays Sergeant Tanner, the guy that Brian answers to.
Oh.
And if you remember, he was Buffalo Bill in Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, yeah.
I never got that until you told me that, Swizz. I never got. I was like, oh, snaps. No, but no lotion though. There was no lotion on his desk.
No. And one other thing I thought was funny was the other guy that Brian O'Connor's character, or Brian Spillner, whatever his name was.
Brian Pill.
Yeah.
Was the black FBI agent Bilkins?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Now that the actor's name is Tom Berry, and the thing I liked about his performance was he's basically playing like the black chief in charge, but he played it low key. You know, most of the black actors who play those parts, they're thankless parts. They have to yell and scream and spit fire and be mad all the time. He was mad, but he was low key, like simmering mad, not like I'm blowing up and acting a fool, man.
Yeah.
And I kind of appreciated that about his performance.
Yeah. Unlike Eddie Murphy and Nick Nolte flick, 48 Hours, where he's like, yeah, I got called the N-word. You're damn right I did. Mm-hmm. <It's>
like, that dude might have been the one who actually started.
That's
all
the
of that,
prototypical, you know? Yeah.
You are the prototype.
Nice. Yeah, man. So, in continuation, as far as like other movies that go afterwards, so it's Fast and Furious 2, which has a Tyrese Gibson in it. Ooh yeah.
Ooh yeah.
And your girl,
Eva Mendez.
Eva Mendez, yeah.
Winghauser's son.
Winghauser's son.
Cole Hauser.
Cole Hauser.
Who has never played a villain. Always plays a villain, but he's good. He's good as a villain.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. What'd you guys think of that one, man? Like I liked the overall, first of all, it was weird because it didn't have Dom in it. It didn't have Vin Diesel in it. So I was like, well, what's, come on. Oh, so Paul Walker obviously was going to be the flagship character.
Yeah.
Carrying the series forward. So I liked how they paired him with Tyrese, and I liked how the car scene would all come out of the garage at the same time where the cops are trying to bust him.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the grand neutralizers the cops had, dude. The missiles that shot like an electrical EMP volt through the car and shut it down. That was awesome, dude. I like that kind of stuff. So
yeah,
I'm very easy to please.
I'm trying to remember the Too Fast, Too Furious. Was Letty in that one?
No. Nah. And this took place in Florida. Like basically the whole thing was, Brian, he's now on the run. Like he's, you know, shunted his policeman duties. I think
he chose his family.
He went along with this whole street racing lifestyle. So now he's on the run. They call him the Snowman. Not not Jeezy, the Snowman.
Damn, where's the Falcon, yeah? Where's the Falcon, yeah?
Yeah, yo. So he's on the run, but he's still taking in like street races, you know, to kind of earn his way, so to speak. And the police finally catch up with him, and they're like, "Look, we got a deal for you. Work with us, but you got to recruit your old friend Roman, played by Tyrese."
That's it. Roman, yo, that's it.
Yeah, yeah. And y'all got to take down, help us take down this dude, played by Cole Hauser, you know?
Right.
And, you know, of course, there's antagonism, you know, when Brian and Roman first meet back up, of course, there's the obligatory fight for no reason, just, man, I ain't seen you in years.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
You know, but finally, but they eventually do get it together, and they go to take this guy down. And you know, the thing about that, D, you were talking about the EMP bolts, right?
Right.
That was like the first inkling that okay, they might be adding more to this, to these movies going forward if they make more. That's where you really start to get the sense of, yeah, like, there's going to be something else. And this was also directed by John Singleton as well, with storyboards by our good friend, Warren Drummond,
yep.
Yeah. So you really start getting the instance of, like, okay, they're shooting these things. That's almost bring like some science fiction into it. Because that's not how that works.
Not at all.
It was so cool, though. It was. I remember I saw this in the theater as well. And even though I was kind of bummed that, you know, like you said, D, Dom wasn't in it, you know what I'm saying? And some of the original cast mm-hmm. weren't, except for Paul Walker. I still found it at the time to be pretty enjoyable. In fact, I saw it twice in the theater. I saw it with my boys first. And then I went back just on my own, you know, after work one day. I just walked over to the theater and just saw it again. You know, it was fun. It was fun, man.
Right.
It's not a bad movie. And I actually remember enjoying it, too, once I did get around to seeing it as a sequel. Warren worked in the art department. He did storyboards. I think he met Brian McGee on that movie.
That's right.
And did storyboards on it. And it takes Warren to tell the story. He's like, that was like one of the best gigs he had ever had at that point, maybe ever. I don't know. Because he said, you know, it's like you're like a great hotel. Everybody had their own room. Wow. You're in Miami. The weather is great.
Yeah.
You know, all these attractive women are walking around. I think Warren was single at the time, or maybe engaged.
Uh-huh.
Okay. But just, you know, like just a great gig for them. And like literally they'd come downstairs from and be right there on the beach.
Wow.
You know, and just be like,
I can see
and sun shining. Mm. So yeah. What were you going to say, D? I'm sorry though.
No, Miami's a beautiful place, man. Like, I can see how that would be very, very, you know, get you to, you know, do things that you wouldn't want to keep, that you would keep in Miami, you know what I mean? So I get that, you know. But, man, I liked it a great deal. You know, sometimes it's like, you know, there's guilty pleasures, and this, I think that's probably one of the things that I must admit, too. Like, if I start watching certain kinds of action flicks, if it catches me by the side of my, on the side eye, and I'm not doing anything that's really interesting or I'm kind of at the end of it, I may tune in for a minute.
Yeah. You know?
But then later on, I want to go back and want to find out what I missed. So I want to like it was good to kind of refresh myself by watching the movie from start to finish, because I've only seen segments of it. Now it all makes sense. Now I see why they were doing what they're doing. Now I see why the final culmination of Toretto running from Brian was so important. And you know, hold on. The whole ties back in the end with the 10-second, I stole your 10-second car. So
right.
That was kind of cool.
Now, let me ask you guys this. Moving ahead to the third movie, Tokyo Drift.
Yes, yo. I like that immensely, dude.
Oh, yeah?
For various reasons.
Now, for me, man, I was like, I remember that's the word where I hit the ejector seat. I was like, nope. I did a John McClane, yo.
See, and you know why I liked it so much? A couple reasons. Well, one of the things I'm very fascinated by Japanese culture.
Sure.
And then to see it like take place outside of LA was a refreshing thing. And to see I think some of the cultural appropriation in some instances was obviously evident there, but also there's some interesting like cool music groups you haven't heard of before, man. Like the Teriyaki Boys, man. You know, they kicked it. That I wonder if you know where it is in Tokyo. You know, that was a great song, dude, for the opening where they were inside the car lot, inside the garage, and they were about to do the Tokyo drifting, which is what it's a real thing,
right?
Like, and people try it all the time, and they don't make it. They fuck up all the time because it's a real skill level thing, man. It's timing and it's It's known as the centrifugal force of the car and vehicle, what it's capable of. And that was apparent in the lead character, that was a country boy who got in too much trouble and had to go to his daddy in Tokyo.
Yeah, yo, like the world's oldest teenager, like Dick Clark and
yeah,
shit.
You say that in exchange, man. But it was good, man, because it reminded me of, it had shades of, and it shades of Karate Kid to it, Dan, like, in it, man. It was like I am the man who will fight for your honor, that whole thing. And I like that, man, because it was, you know, it was this chick who was, you know, obviously part of, you know, I guess the under the ire or under the desire of the lead badass in the film.
Yeah.
And he was connected. He had Yakuza connections. So he didn't dare fuck with him. Everybody knew it. He was, you know, you fuck with him, you might kill your whole family.
Oh,
you
yeah.
So, and want to make you watch and then come get you later on. So he was connected. But, this, of course, the Gaijin challenged it. He's like, I don't give a fuck. And he had Batman and Bow Wow. I gotta admit, man.
Bow Wow.
Well, Bow Wow wasn't a great actor in it, dude. I did like it. I did like his hulked out vehicle, dude. It was kind of smooth, dude.
Sure.
with the hulk doors, yo.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I'm feeling this. I'm feeling this body molding thing. This is cool. You know? So.
You know what though, D? It's funny you say that because even just talking about, you know, obviously we're discussing the original. Mm-hmm. But they did kind of set it up with each movie where, for better or for worse, you know, for on purpose or not, each movie was a little different from the last. Mm-hmm. So the first movie is set in L.A. The second movie is set in Miami with some new characters. Other characters weren't in it. The third movie, they moved it to you know, overseas and introduced even more characters and even fewer of the... Maybe not. Were any of the old characters in Tokyo Drift?
I don't think so, except for that cameo by Dom. That's it.
Yeah. So, and then by the time they get to the fourth one is when they start getting into, like, you know, heists and, you know, like kind of, you know, big super heists and other things. But maybe they were kind of setting you up all along to kind of expect the unexpected.
Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, think about it. The name loosely implies that anybody could be Fast and Furious. So, I mean, you know, it's a matter of, you know, it's a fast moving train that you get on and you do cool shit. So
yeah,
and you're angry about it. So that's what happens in most of the films.
Yeah.
So it works.
Now,
you know,
speaking of that too, D. You know, I have a friend of mine online, a friend named Julian Lytle. Okay. He had taken to calling these movies the Black Avengers. Because once they started doing like these very super things with cars, and the other thing too to mention, and you were intimating this, Wiz, is the multicultural cast, and it got even more, you know, multicultural as the series progressed. And that's what led Julian to call... Every time a new one would come out, he'd be like, man, I'm about to go see the Black Avengers this weekend.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Do you mention the Teriyaki Boys as far as the music in Tokyo Drift? In the original movie, the original 2001 movie, that was the thing that I noticed, like, that's why it really is like an action movie with like a crime heist kind of a subplot.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all painted with illegal street racing. Like, they had a lot of music and a lot of needle drops in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't let you get bored for 1 second. They talk and they cut the music out for maybe a minute or two, and then they would definitely use the music as a cue to get you back into something else, you know, to keep it lively, to like to not have you, again, just get bored.
Yeah.
But, you know, even, like, you playing some Ja Rule songs in certain places and... even though Ludacris wasn't in the very first movie, they play one of "I Got Hoes."
I got hoes.
Different area codes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they play area codes, and even like the music, you know, is like a lot of industrial dance.
Yeah.
Just great. But I mean, again, they just kept it like humming. Mm-hmm. Never ever let it die down for very, very long.
Yeah. Didn't they play I Got Hoes in different area codes in two?
No, I think by then he had another big hit was out, because obviously he was in the movie.
Oh, was it? No, it was Move Bitch Get Out the Way.
Yes, because she even says it. She even says it.
Okay. I think so. Okay. I think you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. She's like,
woo, bitch, get out the way.
You know?
Yeah.
But you know, the other thing too, Swizz, you were talking about the music. That was very noticeable because there's one scene like where everybody's kind of mustering and getting ready for the race. And you go from like car to car and each car is playing. In fact, they have one camera move where they kind of pan across the different cars.
Yes.
And
yes.
They have like,
I love
that. Yeah.
I love that scene. Yo. I caught that right away where you, it was like you were moving in and out of each person's car and you could hear what they were listening to.
Yeah. Yeah. And they just kind of, again, that really built upon that, that effect of being so multicultural. Like everybody's got their thing, but they're unified under this one culture. You know, there's one thing with this street race. I really think that that's a very integral part of the popularity early on, and even probably to this day. You know, with those films, you have a character in there for everybody, but at the same time, everybody can identify with all the characters as a whole, as an ensemble. But you still have like your favorites there, in and out of there too.
Yeah, that's
a good point, man. As far as one goes, man, I have one particular gripe, and it kind of dates the film for me, amongst other things. But I was not in love with the decals on the side of the vehicles, man. They looked really, really they were not great, sir. Like the artist who did those. I mean, I'm sorry, I don't know, bro. It's like maybe it was a fabrication was the issue. Like they might have been better looking if they had taken up more space and been more like integral to the car.
Yeah.
But as far as side paneling goes, they were kind of weak. Yo. I was like, man, this is the best they can do on the budget they have. Like, okay, you need to work on that, bro.
Yeah, but I think that was kind of indicative, too, of that time period. And I agree with you. It does kind of date it. You know, like, that's something you would have seen then, but you definitely would not see now. You know, you definitely don't see that now. Like, you see cars that are kitted out and tricked out now, but it's just more of, Look at the detailing on this car as far as like how it's built and this spoiler and things like that, as opposed to like just the exterior. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah. You know, the other thing too, while you're talking about the first movie again, D, I thought it was real interesting how they did some of the effects in there. You know, like when the race, that very first race starts and you see them getting into like... You were talking about Wally West earlier. Like, they start accessing that speed force. Like, everything just becomes just a blur. Like, and then, like, it's such that that's what it sounds like when you're riding that fast or whatnot. If you've ever ridden very fast. Yes, that hum. Yeah, and you just hear wind. Woof, 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 woof.
Yeah.
And then just the way that when the cars are kind of side by side angling for the lead, they sounded like TIE fighters, yo. Like,
wah, 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 banshees.
Yeah, man. It was great. It was great, man. Oh, man. It was fantastic, man.
D, you were talking earlier about, I think you were talking about the colors of the cars. The director of photography for the movie, a guy named Erickson Kaur, he was talking about the look that they were trying to achieve. And they said, you know, L.A. is not really like a great place to shoot. You know, it's not really very colorful. So he said what they did is they shot it, and they shot L.A. itself in more muted colors, like greens and yellows and browns, that kind of stuff. But they said they wanted the cars to be the pops. Uh-huh. So the cars were the hot pinks and the fuchsias and the... you know, the indigo blues and the lime greens.
Yeah.
Those would be the pops. And I imagine it was probably the opposite in Miami, because Miami is a very colorful place. So when they shot the second movie, I'm sure they wanted to play up the color of the city as part of, as part of the look of the movie, so to speak.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
But
A bit of trivia, man, I didn't know this, but... Ricky Yoon, I think that's his name, the actor who played Johnny Tran, he was saying, these cars don't have speedometers and they don't have rearview mirrors.
Oof. Shit.
Why would you look back?
They're not looking behind them.
Right.
And he says, and they're never taking their eyes off of the road, so they're never looking at the speedometer. So he says they know how fast they're going. They can feel it. but they don't have speedometers and they don't have rearview mirrors. I was like, damn.
They're like the Uruk-hai of the road, dude. They're like the fucking Lord of the Rings Uruk-hai. They're armor in the back because they weren't getting attacked from the back. They only get attacked from the front. So I'm going to go full steam straight ahead.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, man. I got some casting trivia that I pulled up.
All right.
Okay.
The role of Dominic Toretto, before it was given to Vin Diesel, actually before he agreed to take the role, so like I said, he wanted him to make some script changes. They offered the role to Timothy Oliphant.
Timothy Oliphant?
Timothy Oliphant, yep.
That's my boy, but...
he is my boy, too, but I think, you know, he was coming off of the juice of being in Go, where he played this kind of a tough... drug dealer, charismatic drug dealer type.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was in Gone in 60 Seconds.
Yeah.
With Nicolas Cage and Angelina Jolie right before this. And so he was just like, ah, it's just not my thing. And he turned it down. And then that's when they turned to Vin Diesel.
Okay, good.
Okay.
And Vin Diesel got the role. Now, the role of Brian O'Connor, three people they were considering for.
Okay.
Okay.
The first, Eminem.
Wow.
Hey, y'all are laughing, but this was after 8 Mile.
Yeah.
And you know, he had kind of proven himself, you know, as a you know, good novice actor in 8 Mile, so they considered him for it. And it didn't happen, but
wow.
Go ahead, sir.
I was just going to say no. And he was great in 8 Mile, but you know. There was going to be an obligatory scene of him rapping. You know.
Yeah.
You don't go to see Eminem for his acting. You go to see him spit right. bars. Spitting bars and driving cars.
Right.
Shit.
You know, and that's his wheelhouse. I mean, and that role 8 Mile is built for him.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, I mean, yeah, him doing something else is not him.
Yeah.
You know, that's not him at all.
The other thing, too, is his performance in 8 Mile, I give all the credit to Curtis Hanson, the director.
Right.
Of really being able to take, you know, somebody who doesn't, like, give him enough of a lane and give him enough to chew on that he can actually do.
Right.
And I give that to Curtis Hanson. But the other two people that they considered, or, you know, thought, hey, okay, this would be great, was Mark Wahlberg.
Mm. Okay.
And Christian Bale. Well, but keep in mind, they're probably thinking Christian Bale after Shaft.
Yeah.
You know, where he played kind of a New York guy who was kind of, you know, a real new, tough kind of New York character.
Uh-huh.
That's probably what they were banking on, but.
But I'm thinking about in terms of the, let's just say any of those characters actually played the role besides Vin Diesel. I'm thinking about in terms of ethnicity. Like they have to recast all like his sister and everything because Dominic is his sister. He looks like him and Letty
Mia.
They like brother and sister.
Yeah,
they could be brother
yeah,
and sister.
Exactly.
So they have to recast everybody. That was the case. I mean, it's like, you know, if they start with Vin Diesel as a lead character and the lead part of the lead driving force of the role, they have to recast everybody else to fit, you know, those other two choices. I think anyway.
Yeah, I mean it. It definitely, it's a different movie if Timothy Oliphant is playing Dominic.
Yeah.
It can maybe be the same movie if it's Mark Wahlberg playing Brian O'Connor because I don't think Paul Walker's a very good actor at all.
Yeah.
He was just a pretty boy with charisma, but he was never a great actor. And Wahlberg has actually gotten a little better as an actor.
Yeah.
Over the years. But at that time he was, you know, he was whoever he was in, you know, 2001, you know.
Planet of the Apes, yeah.
Oh, Planet of the Apes, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
So, another bit of trivia, this is the last one I've got, is Jordana Brewster and Michelle Rodriguez did not have driver's licenses before this movie.
Damn.
Dang. Wow.
Wow.
So, they had to work with the stunt coordinator and A, learn how to drive, and then B, learn how to kind of look like they could really, you know, like do some shit.
Well,
you know, behind the wheel of the car.
Well, that worked.
Jordana did it too, man. She did it, bro.
Yeah,
man,
it worked.
Yeah.
Confidence, man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought so too.
You're wheel jockey, yo.
Yeah. You know, the last thing I wanted to kind of ask you guys about was, is like, obviously, again, this is the movie that basically birthed a billion-dollar franchise.
Yeah.
And I was trying to think, you know, what is it about this movie that really, you know, that brought all of that to the, you know, to pop culture? And I think part of it is something that you both have touched on and mentioned in different ways. Even though this is not like a deep movie, even though these are not super well-written characters and, you know, you got to have, you know, crazy backstories in your head so that you can really bring the emotion, they played it like for real. They never played it like it was some popcorn candy bullshit. You know, they took it seriously from the beginning. What do you guys think?
Yeah, man, I think, like for example, to your point, like when Brian breaks in to see what's going on with the inside the I guess the where the Mexicans' cars were.
Yeah,
they might have been Mexicans. Let's say Latins. You know, when he breaks into their garage and he gets popped in the head by Vince, mm-hmm. and he's drug out, and he's like, okay, Brian, I want you to choose your words very carefully.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
It's like, oh shit, this kind of changed from a gumball movie to like some serious shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. He comes stepping out of the shadows, yo.
Yeah, yo.
Mm-hmm.
Some Batman shit, yo. So I like that, man. It took itself, like, it didn't take itself too seriously, but it was seriously enough to where it wasn't like some, you know, you believed in the idea of what they were supposed to be, and as a ragtag family of misfits.
Yeah.
You know? And that played throughout, and it worked for me. What about you, Adrian?
You know, family. That's what it is. That's what it is. And if you look at, like, a lot of those successful franchises, I'm talking about even with Star Wars, the Avengers movies, the actual Avengers movies and everything.
That's true.
It's a recurring cast of characters that really become, like, a family. You every other year, you know you're going to visit with your family. You know, this other family for 2 hours, and it's gonna be fun, you know.
Right.
And that's what it is with the Fast and Furious movies too. You have this cast that really became like a family. Like, okay, so much so that, like, when Paul Walker, you know, passed, it hit a lot of people hard. You know what I'm saying? Like, I even found myself, now I didn't choke up, but I was still like, damn, yo, damn.
Yeah, it was an odd way he went out too, man. He went out fast and furiously, dude.
Yeah,
and
driving
in the car crash.
Yeah, yo.
So it was fucked up.
Yeah, so you keep seeing like this evolving cast of characters that have become like a second family to a generation of film goers, you know? And you see more people coming into the family, you know? You welcoming them in and, you know, having a good time with them, you know? And you like to see this family, you like to visit with them, you know, often, and they're going to keep coming as long as people keep wanting to visit with this cast, with this family of characters.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I think that's the enduring, you know, thing with the movies to me, you know.
That concludes this episode of Sidebar Forever, hosted by Dwight Clark, Swain Hunt, and Adrian Johnson. You can find us online at sidebarforever.com. Any emails or questions can be directed to us at sidebarforever@gmail.com. And also, subscribe to us on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram. Sidebar Forever is copyright 2020. Dwight Clark, Swain Hunt, and Adrian Johnson.